Sweet Lomka. Ah, no, it's not sweet.
Yeah, it's not sweet, ne? It's not holy, vandaag.
It's not holy.
Ah, it's not holy. No, makwe. It's got to boss. Don't be afraid. Even Jaws here saying no, it's not sweet nom katakata today. As I was saying yesterday to Uzwelakhe, it's not a goodbye, it's a see you later. It's a see you later in a different form, doing other things, you know. It's been great, man Makwe. It's been great. You've been with us from day one. Always standing ready, not just for us, but many others here at the Public Broadcaster, you know, who tap into your insights and your wealth of wisdom, of understanding and your depth of understanding of capital markets, of what's happening in many of the companies that we speak of here. And of course, you've made an immeasurable contribution to this show. And for that, we'll forever be appreciative. So, siyabonga masilela. Thank you very much, my brother.
Bonga to you, and I'm going to miss you.
Ah, siyathokoza. Makwe, hey baba, let's start that Palo World. There is a lot in there. But look, I guess a relatively good set of numbers. I don't know if it's too early to test whether or not this strategy that is being led there by Dominic Zoella and his team of offloading some of the non-core assets. I mean, talking about those non-core assets, we caught up 2 weeks ago with Ramasela Ganda, who's the CEO out at Zeda. So the folk who have Avis and, those car rental businesses there. And they were saying, for the first time as a company separately listed from Barloworld, putting out a good set of numbers. So is it too early to tell, or are we really seeing, I guess, some of the fruits of this, reimagined Barloworld?
Not really, I think let's celebrate, We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But as you said, these are pleasing set of results. And we can see that, activities in the mining sector help. Fleet replacement did a good benefit for that. So you cannot say it's too early, stuff like that. Looking to this better than expected results in Russia, though still lower than the prior period. The opening of the Chinese borders, we just have to celebrate all that, and we know that improved the free flow of products and commodities in the region. I'm saying most of these things are fundamental. So something fundamental, I think, is worth celebrating. It's not like some noise that tomorrow will go off. And higher commodity prices and growth in the export volumes help to offset that flat domestic sales that we have seen back home here. Yes, Russia-Ukraine conflict, they continue to have an impact because they reduce the product price. Also constrained supply chain. And remember, as you said, they got out of the car business, their leasing business. And we know that business after COVID and during COVID, it was not doing that great. I had to increase your revenue by 14.9%. And that helped you to have almost a 15% jump when it comes to your EBITDA. Maybe just to unpack this, guys, EBITDA is a measure of companies' financial health. And most importantly,
so is that the money they make from their operations, Makwe, the core of their operations?
And most importantly, their ability to generate cash. What else do you need? And also that 18% increase when it comes to operating profit, and that's from the core trading activities, as you said. Yeah, you might say, guys, you've got more working capital requirements, so that is the result to increase your net debt. But my point and the direct answer to your question, I don't think it's too early to celebrate.
And then, of course, when you say it's not too early to celebrate, there's also a bigger question of to what degree can some of these better-than-expected machine sales to the mining sector be sustained, both here at home and in some of the other operations? You said something about Eurasia, Russia, Mongolia. But to what degree can that be sustained? Because we've seen commodity prices soften somewhat, which means, commodity production might not continue on the same scale. Many miners carrying inventories. So we can, many people might say this might be a flash in the pan. Do you see this as a sustained, level of demand coming through from the mining sector that might, in the future, continue to buoy the numbers of Barloworld?
Not really, especially when it comes to those machinery. I used to have a friend that said, when you are a salesperson selling a caterpillar, you are happy to sell one a year.
Yeah.
And you know,
how much are those things?
Yeah, because millions and millions. you know, and here you're talking 15, 20, you know, you're talking decent transportation, the ones which are working at a mine, you know, but as much as it takes you long to replace them, and remember, those things are working 24 hours, so you cannot run that thing for 6-7 years. Very soon you have to service that, very soon you have to replace that. But there's another part that is going to have a large demand, the life of the infrastructure spend. If that gets true, you know, to be successful, then there'll be another demand coming from that. And remember, it's not just a question of the replacement, it's also this higher commodity prices, the export volume, stuff like that. Look into Instagram, that thing will continue to do well. Remember, that's the business that they bought from Tonga to Hilux. I mean, higher commodity prices, growth in export volumes, that should continue to help. Should this global banking crisis not lead the world economy to get into a recession, then one will start to expect an uptick when it comes to commodities, when it comes to the growing of the economies globally.
The other issue then, of course, Mark, we're on this one, just as we wrap up, what do you make of the how that latest you know, acquisition, if I look at you know, them saying a lot of what they're going to do from now onwards is about, you know, cost discipline, prudent allocation of capital, looking for merger and acquisition opportunities and potential, you know, acquisitions that can benefit their value lines. I mean, what do you make of how the acquisition they did in 2020 from Tongaat of Ingrain, how was that performed? That starch, glucose and all manner of other things business.
Very well. It managed to fit in just like, you know, hand in a glove, and immediately started to give them the necessary results. And as you are saying, all those things, those are the basic things that any executive is expected to do to maintain the cost, to make sure that you allocate capital accordingly. And I'm saying those things are not even worth mentioning because that's what is expected of you. So it's not like you're doing anything extraordinary. And also to try to look for opportunities, yes, it's all well and good, especially if you don't overpay whatever opportunities you're trying to get out there. I'm trying to say Paolo is trying in a way to be more of a plain call, you know, going forward, because they get to produce some of the things that are trying also to be a trader at the same time. So probably that will work for them going forward.
Yeah, talking about traders, it seems British Petroleum exiting stage left from the aviation fuel business in South Africa. And I guess I'm not sure what this is going to mean for some of the airports that are operated by the Airport Company of South Africa.
You know what? It gives a space for the likes of Petro SA. And yes, it makes sense that, yes, they get at some point, because I say it all has to do with their APP, aviation strategy, in the global one. Mm. And I don't think it's all because of Russia issues. I mean, who will be supplying is Shell? Who's Shell? Shell is the principal American subsidiary of the Royal Dutch Shell, which is based in Netherlands. So all I'm trying to say, Shell, as it is now, is more of an American company, and we know the Americans are the ones who've been leading when it comes to imposing sanctions against Russia. So if it has anything to do with sanctions, then the likes of Shell would have been the first one expected to have left. Hmm. So I'm buying their story that it's got more to do with the strategy, because we'll be supplying them. It's Shell.
But also, I mean, Mark, we've never known these oil majors to be the paragons of morality, right?
Yeah, but Shell is the principal American subsidiary of the Royal Dutch Shell.
No, I'm saying even the likes of BP. It's not that this is out of any higher sense of conscience, you know. I mean, they've never been known to be people who typically, I guess, get involved in operational decisions that have any bearing on morality. Like, they're not going to stop trading with a certain country or even stop buying fuel from a certain country that has any human rights abuses or anything like that.
Not true. Money comes first for them. They will continue as long as they're making good money out of this whole thing. I agree with you. But Petro SA should see this as a very good opportunity. And Petro SA must not even wait for demand to pick up. Petro SA must start marketing themselves so that they generate that demand and stop buying local and make sure that they bring a vessel here of jet fuel. That's an opportunity for them to grow. I hope they're going to open a space for a Chinese company.
I hope it opens up space for our company, Petro SA, company of the South African people. For once, we certainly hope that, you know, they can at least play a role here. You know, and even if they give them some of these other airports. I mean, East London, for instance, you know, and George as well, I think, are the two ones where PetroSA is hoping to hover around those ones. I think it would be good. I really think it would
definitely
be good.
Definitely. And I'm saying they have to be aggressive when it comes to that, because here they are, they've got the necessary backing from the government, and there's an opportunity really for anyone out. It just happened. So take up the opportunity and run with it. They must not have this long, long notice and say we are working on it, as we usually do, that we are still working on it.
What do they say? Long meetings, we are working on it. Oh my God. Hey, Marco. Look, bro, let's shift our attention to another story here that we've got. It's a story coming out of RCL Foods. I was trying to explain earlier on to colleagues that if you ever go to a supermarket and there are those gentlemen, it's often young people, you know, young ladies, young gentlemen who are wearing, you know, I guess cold suits or wearing like a jersey. It's always like a blue V-neck jersey. And ibhalwe Vector up esifubeni. So they are like the merchandisers, and I often see them, I guess, in the cold stuff, you know, seldom in some of the other aisles. But this is a company that effectively was vertically integrated with within the what I would call the sort of chicken empire of RCL. And it's not only chicken, there are many other products, of course, but it was very much part of the downstream side of that. So if you think in the poultry space that RCL would have investments in feed, would have, you know, slaughterhouses, would have all manner of other than, you know, retail operations and downstream logistics operations. And one of those is this one in Vector, which is now, yeah, going to be offloaded to a purchaser, EMIF2 Investment. And interesting one here, of course, because this vehicle is fully owned by it seems a Danish venture capital or infrastructure fund. What do you make of this, Makwe, and I guess the importance at this stage for the likes of RCL to get cash in hand and start to rejig to what degree they were vertically integrated?
Definitely, and you know, we need to remember that this RCL started more as a Rainbow Chicken, and we need to know that it's got to be owned by Remgro. I think they own 80% thereof.
Yes,
and
yes.
These are the mafia number one guys, you know, we are all Mavasi guys. But the Vector Logistics itself, so remember, when their interns which were released, I think a month back or so, these guys incurred a serious cost pressure, and we all know, because when it comes to logistics, the purchase, they continue to be a very serious burden. High inflation rate is making all these repairs and stuff like that expensive as well. But yeah, going forward, I think it's a strategic move for RCL, as they want to concentrate more on their consumer value added product, and so that they can start competing fairly when it comes to that sector. And I think they're also trying to separate poultry as well from these consumer goods. So, based on the amount that they'll be getting, the business has not been doing that great, but yeah, it's up there to other Vector, customers approving, because they're not only transporting stuff for RCL, they're doing that for other media manufacturers as well. And I don't see them opposing the transaction, but yeah, right. In cases like this, we've seen people getting rid of some of the assets and use the money to pay down most of their debt. And in an environment where interest rates have been going up, I might as well try as much as you can to do whatever that you have.
What are some of the conditions precedent, as you guys often say? What are some of the things that need to happen for this deal to go through?
Shareholders approval, competition approval, getting customers to approve as well, that is it okay to do that. So those are some of the...
So by customers, who are these downstream customers, like Nando's and, you know, all manner of... That? Okay.
Yeah, because remember, they got into RCL, signing contracts with them that you are owned by...
I see.
By Vector, that you are owned by RCL. So now you're going to be owned by Marco, you know? Are you happy to still continue? Because ordinarily, if you buy, it means you must buy all the assets and liabilities and honor whatever contract that they have already signed.
So, but this is not RCL walking away, Nemakwe, because it seems to me, I mean, and you might assist me here because it's very dense English that is often written in these statements. It says, as part of the disposal, RCL Foods will convert the existing shareholder loan advanced to Vector to newly issued ordinary shares of Vector. So they're going to convert the loan into shares. RCL, I guess, walking away as a dominant shareholder, but I don't know to what degree that you know, principal value of the loan they had extended to Vector might continue to give them a sizable stake.
They are working away, you know, they're just playing with English. RCL or whoever is buying them should pay back that shareholder's loan.
So what, they're going to buy back the shares? So once the loan is converted into shares, they're going to then buy back the shares?
Yeah, it comes to the same thing. It's either you pay them the 500 that you owe them as shareholder's loan, or they take that 500 and convert it into shares, and you as a purchaser, you buy all the shares of Victor.
So I see. Okay, all right. Okay. So it's not necessarily post the transaction, you holding a stake to the value of the loan you had advanced, but it's actually converting that loan into shares now, so that when this company, this Danish company, buys everything, that those shares are included in that.
Exactly. Lock, stock, and
buy. I see. Footstools. Okay. All right. Makwe, then the other thing, I don't know, man. You know, you know people. You know things. How easy is it to get, like, parts for a goods train?
Depending on why I'm looking for those parts.
Yeah, man, I want to help Transnet, man. I want to help Transnet. We're looking for parts here. We have over 100 trains that are not running that should be delivering coal. We're looking for parts.
This Chinese company at Delela, Chelata.
Marco, let's do this. Hold the line. I want to quickly go to ads. And then when we come back, also to the listeners, if you know anybody who's got spare parts for, freight locomotives, you might want to let us know, because they're saying again. It's a second part of our business wrap here as we wrap up with Makwe Masilela. And of course, very interesting story here coming out of that ill-fated 1064 contract. It's, you know, when I think about it now, Makwe, it's one of those things, you know, at the time I remember, because, you know, I was reading up on this for something I had to write. It was around 2011, 2012, that the debate had been, we need these trains because these trains will respond to Transnet's reading of market demand. So they were saying, if ever we're going to have a commodity cycle again, then our market demand strategy must have at least ensured that our rail capacity is there. And in particular, we have enough locomotives to be able to ferry that stuff. And then they went out and bought just over 1,000 trains. And we know how that story unfolded. But in hindsight now, we are, for instance, in certain commodity categories in a boom, and the locals are missing in action. What's happening here?
You know, as you heard from me, I mean, this thing in 2019, this whole deal was halted, and I think it was worth around 50 billion because I think things were not done that right way. My concern here is the guys are refusing to normalize their business relations, because all they need to do, they need to make sure that they normalize their relationship with the South African Reserve Bank and also SARS. Those are very critical when it comes to this whole issue of dealing with people outside the country. So how do they want to operate in this country? They want to operate on their terms and conditions. It can't be. And worse, we did have to take a meeting yesterday with the president and Transnet for the Minister Godan to say we'll go to China in April. This whole thing has been there ever since.
But also, Makwe, but surely this should have been intervened at a political level early on when this issue happened, because both of these are state-owned companies in both countries.
I agree. Today we've got at least a bit of some rent in our coffers, all because of these mining companies who've been making super profits. But all these mining companies are not able to maximize their profits because they cannot transport things. Abu Tungela, coal is a problem, manganese is a problem, chrome is a problem. And all I'm saying is, as you are saying, the reasoning was right. But let's be real. Imagine if this whole thing was optimized. How much money we have generated. And hence, it's true, even though they don't want to accept, we did miss out when it comes to the commodity super boom. That cycle will miss out, and we will continue to invest because you can produce as much as you can at the mine. But unfortunately, if you cannot move that, then it's going to be a problem. And at some point, I know private companies were also trying to help Transnet, meaning the very same mining companies. to say, let's try to talk to the Chinese guy. Hence, you've got the Minister Pravin Gordhan calling. But you are right. This kind of intervention could have happened long. Hey, by the way, we are part of BRICS now.
I was, you know, I mean, I mean, we're the hosts this year of BRICS. You know, so it's not just, we're not just some, you know, by the by. I mean, this is serious stuff.
Exactly. And this could have been done long. You know, this is very central and very core to our economy.
We cannot leave this
to the last minute, you know. And the first round of talks say they're going to work out. You're going to wait months and months. Okay, this can't be right.
No.
Why don't they just do the right thing? Look what is happening with them, with the road and belt stuff. They gave people billions, now they have to bail them out. I think 22 countries or so. So this China story, they just need to revisit the way they started doing things.
Yeah, but also Nati, man. I mean, you know, one of the things that I really appreciate, you know, about Derko at the moment is this ability in our foreign policy to integrate, you know, the firm level strategies of national champions and some of our own economic interests in our foreign policy outlook. We saw it, for instance, in how Derko was party to the resolution of the, you know, Ghana MTN issue at some stage and some of the issues that MTN was having there. But I don't know why, to what degree that can't also be done and extended in the same vein to the state-owned companies. It's not just only in Transnet where you've got this issue now, but similarly, if you take a look at Eskom, where are all of those original equipment manufacturers, some of them Swedish and all manner of those things? To what degree does a diplomatic kind of engagement yield some outcomes where these OEMs, some of them, of course, have been wrapped over the knuckles. I mean, ABB can come forward and say, you know what, we've paid the fine, but our other mea culpa and apology to South Africans will include us giving some engineering time to Eskom to fix, because those things are there, it's their machinery, you know?
Exactly. And those diplomatic ties or interventions that always stay. Any company that goes out of South Africa and try to do business somewhere else, they try to talk and inform our ambassadors.
Yes, sir.
So it all starts there. And all I'm saying, when there's problems, it still has to go there. So this is, for me, the natural progression. That people going out, you've got your embassy that's facilitating things for you to meet business people with some interest in that particular country, blah, blah, blah. So as much as when you have issues, then it should still continue to follow the same route. And because I'm kind of, it's not a big deal kind of a thing, you know. About China, maybe they're big brothers. You have to think twice before you approach them. I don't know. But the very same thing that they could have, that they've done for MTN at Ghana, the very same thing. Don't you think there was some political interference when it comes to MTN Nigeria? There was. The very same principle could have easily been applied. And this one is not just to benefit private shareholders. It is to benefit your citizens of the country.
Hi, Makwe. Let's leave it here for tonight, bro, and for this shape and form, because with a podcast. My brother, to appreciate you, to express immeasurable gratitude to you. Long may you be blessed and continue in the work that you do of becoming a link for many of us into that world of the capital markets and the financial markets. Siyathokoza masilela, siyabonga, and ekumudabuka khwethu man.
Yeah, siyathokoza for all of the best.
Danko. Makwe Masilela, Chief Investment Officer and Founder out at Makwe Fund Managers. Kanin Lindini. We continue to take your voice notes after this. Yeah, Khumutso out there on Twitter saying, hey, man, no, Chief, this people shall govern chant on your show. Where is it from? As we said, as we started yesterday, we're unpacking certain parts of the show from whence it comes. Somebody asked yesterday about the guava juice one, Shake Shake. I'll explain a bit more about that, of course, in the second hour. But this particular chant is a chant that was recorded by Radio Freedom from the camps, Zomkhonto weSizwe. I'm not sure where particularly, but it's actually, you can find it on YouTube, the whole song. and many other fascinating songs that are certainly not, you know, part of the, I guess, song sang post-apartheid. I certainly haven't heard this song being sang. I haven't heard any lady so Ngenange Chambo as well sang. But yeah, that's where it's from. From Radio Freedom, which of course was the broadcast service on shortwave of Umkhonto weSizwe and the African National Congress in exile. And that's where this chant comes from. But of course, you know, zezinto zisiququzelelayo zisikhumbuzayo zisivuselelayo zisikhumbuza ukuba hey sisesedabini. And I think indeed that's one of the things we need to always remember. If there's anything that we've tried to do on this show, is to always sharpen the focus, sharpen our aperture and our focus on the unfinished and even yet to be started economic tasks of our revolution. Siselapho nangoku. And I think that's something that we need to think about. But let's take a listen to some of those voice notes. And when we come back, we'll also check in with some of those tweets as well. And the messages, the warm messages, you know, oh, and it sends us Foba Samsa Kukumale with all of the warm messages that you're sending out there on Twitter and on Facebook. Please continue.
Good evening, Aya. This is Lakhari Sefoka from Limpopo. Well, I've been listening to your show all round. I enjoyed your topics, your business topics. I introduced one of my cousin to your show. I told him, man, I know you love business in general, so listen to this guy from 7 to 9 p.m. on Metro FM, Aya Bongakawe. So yeah, he's been enjoying the show. One day he WhatsApped me and said, wow, what a guy, I'm learning a lot. Well, I enjoy your topics, especially when you speak to Nozipo and Akona and Makwe. I'm not sure what Makwe studied, but I know that Nozipo and Akona are chartered accountants. I'm also in that space. I have a degree in accounting, so I enjoy it when they unpack the financial statements of companies, the revenues and all stuff. Yeah, so I'm also learning a lot from you guys.
Oh, that's great, man. That's great.
So go well. The podcast, yeah, we shall wait.
Salute, salute.
And I'm following you. I'm following Nosipo. I'm following Makwe. I'm following Akona. So I'm armed with information leadership from you guys.
Thank you very much.
Debate issues when we are chilling with other guys.
Sure.
About finance.
Yeah.
I know that. Listening to you guys, I know they don't stand a chance.
Thank you very much. Look, my brother, you know that's what we've been about here. We try and arm one another with knowledge. Sifumane izixhobo zoziphilisa and zobawa. Ayikho enye indlela. That's what we're trying to do here. And of course, I'm so glad to hear from an accountant. Because you see, part of what we've tried to do with that business slot is to make income statements, balance sheets, trading updates, you know, and any other guidance that comes from listed companies and even in other stories as well, in company news that is outside of the listed space. We really wanted to make those updates, those presentations, those statements come alive in story form, because it's not just dreary numbers. Annual financial statements is about 52 to 53 weeks worth of economic and organizational activity for firms. And I think for us, where we've been able to try and bring that closer, but also to connect it to us, because we're also consumers, that many of the brands that we interact with, when you go and you take, you know, that Sunshine D off of a fridge or a shelf, it's been our task to tell you that no, that Sunshine Tea is produced by Isiqalo Spreads, which is part of Remgro, which is also part of RCL, which also makes this product and the other product. So that this idea of arming ourselves with economic knowledge about our surroundings becomes as much a part of our civic education as anything else. By civic education, I mean the kind of education that should be just a minimum for all of us who call ourselves patriotic citizens of the society, so that we can make a contribution and we make an informed contribution. But we also make informed buying decisions as well. And I certainly hope to some degree we have tried to do that. Maskesiv babati nabanye. It's the headline segment here on Metro FM Talk. It's a little after 8 p.m. You tuned in to Metro FM Talk with myself, Ayabonga Cawe. It's our last show on this here platform. And yeah, of course, coming back in an entirely different form in the next while. And we'll say a bit more about that. But we go straight into our headline segment. And tonight, yeah, 2 decades later, after the democratic breakthrough in the early 90s, the community of Khayelitsha has finally set to get a police station, but it seems it might just be a temporary structure. Many of you, of course, would know that in 2004, an open field had been identified where a new police station was set to be built. And among the issues that were raised at the commission that involved former National Director of Public Prosecutions, Vusi Pikoli, Judge, was it Judge Cathy Satchel? Maybe Uzama will tell me. I can't recall the other judge who was a part of that commission, which was looking at the relationship between Abahlali Base Khayelitsha and, of course, AbakwaZindlondlo in that area. And to mark 5 years since the commission made its recommendations, the SJC, the Social Justice Coalition, together with residents of Makaza, have occupied the vacant site since 2019, and have built a wall using concrete bricks. And in the center of the land, the wall is painted with white, kuthiwa iMakaza Police Station. And also a mobile police station was opened in November of 2021. But residents are saying it's useless and they still have to travel to the Harare Police Station to report crimes. To give us the latest in relation to this one, I'm joined by Zama Mtunzi from the Social Justice Coalition. Zama?
Hey,
what's up?
Hey, I'm
good. Hey, I'm well, my brother. Great to speak to you. I was saying now to the listeners, you know, I do this for 4 years. I can't recall speaking to you in this role at SJC. We wait for my last show to speak, because there's so many things, actually, I wanted us to unpack. Because we've seen reports, you know, nako MoneyWeb, nako Zinyindawo, talking about some of the challenges you are confronted with. So maybe towards the end of the discussion, we might just want to touch on those. But maskes ngokole ngale police station ingatifike eKhayelitsha. Talk to me about, I guess, some of the concerns that the community has about the mobile police station that was opened at the end of 2021, and some of the difficulties in accessing some of policing services in that part of the world.
As you said, it's been almost 9 years since the Khayelitsha Commission of Inquiry into Policing made the recommendation that police station must be built in Makaza, Khayelitsha. And I think for the SJC, this is one of the most important campaigns of social movement. And I think Khayelitsha has been up in arms around this issue. And I think we're here today because of their continuous campaigning. And I think we can see how people in Khayelitsha still have to travel from the Makaza to go to Harare and other police stations to report crimes. And I think the big campaign and what the SJC has been doing around this case is to actually poke into the issue of police resourcing in this country and how it disadvantages poor and less open-source communities, not just in Khayelitsha, but generally in the culture in the country.
And you know, Zama, I mean, I find it so bizarre that, you know, whenever we speak about the crime statistics that are shared by the South African Police Service, you find some of the townships in the Western Cape appearing there on some of the most, you know, horrific crimes. You think of Nyanga, for instance. You think of some of what appears out in Langa. And of course, parts of Khayelitsha also can be found in some of those numbers. But to what degree there's investment in policing resources, it seems it doesn't really, I guess, chime up with some of the numbers that we see by way of incidences of crime.
Yes, so back in 2 years ago, on the 17th of March, Justice Lucchini and Zueni of the Equality Court in Cape Town made a ruling that the police minister and the commissioner must meet with the SJC to discuss what they have now termed the THRR, which is basically the Theoretical Human Resource Requirement, where we were pushing for the department and the Minister of Police to basically look into this issue around policing and how distribution is done. Because we were raising issues around poor black areas being treated badly, issues around high violent crime areas not being prioritized. And I think in the community, to also the Nyanga Community Policing Forum joining us in that case, we have made that case that the resources in the benefit of the rich and white areas, while the high violent areas, the black working class areas, do not get police resources. So we're still going to now meet the steps before each of the figure of February, where we'll discuss the theoretical event source requirements. Which by how are these things supposed to be distributed? And we hope that will come forward, because they still are appealing to say that how resources are made available is fair and just, and we are happy that the court has actually ruled in our favor to say they must revise what we call the recognition of the source requirements.
Let's maybe just pause here for a second, Zama, and take a quick spot break. But when we come back, I want us maybe just to unpack a bit more, you know, some of the issues that the residents of Makaza are raising about why this mobile structure is useless, and to what degree, I guess, you know, we've heard meaningful responses from the South African Police Service and some of the provincial and national leadership. We'll continue with Zama Mthunzi after this. It's our headline segment here on Metro FM Talk. 12 minutes it is after 8 p.m. We're in discussion with the Social Justice Coalition's Zama Mthunzi. And we're talking about, challenges of policing out in Khayelitsha. And Zama, just before we went to the break, I guess I wanted to get a clearer sense some of the issues that the residents of Makaza are raising, not just about the uselessness of the police station, but also in relation to their relationship with Amapolisa. Because we know in certain communities there are community policing forums which serve as a bridge in some cases between the community, Namapolisa, and one of the reasons why the Khayelitsha Commission was set up in the first place was to deal with this broader matter of the broken relationship between the police service and the community. Abahlali bathini ngalondo?
Well, I mean, with the announcement of this news, we tentatively celebrate, you know, we celebrate with caution. And so that is part of the country about the Khayelitsha and the types of criminal activities they have to take in as a community because of lack of response. And of course, Abakali has, over the years, since the commission has built a mistrust, of course, of Amapolisa because of how they treated some of the methods that they've driven in the community. And I think, seen as SJC, we've made sure that we work with the political forum, and I think they've been very critical and very important in this struggle for e-policing resources for e-working class communities. And I think our relationship is not perfect, is not one that is, you know, good and great, but I think we've been able to push for e-safety in very great ways. And I think as this effect is, of course, fulfill its promise that the actual structure, you know, of BRICS will be there by the end of 2026, then that's also one of the victories of we're looking at in the next 10 years.
And then, of course, maybe Zama, just with the few minutes we do have, you know, it's never a good day to hear any organization going through any difficulties. Ingakumbi imibutho esebenzisana nabahlali in working class communities. It's been sad to read reports about the challenges that the Social Justice Coalition is confronted with. A movement that has been around since 2008, Isilwe Elidabila Bahlali. Maybe just explain to us, kwenzeke ntoni to get to this point. We also understand that donors are taking a very tentative view until it's much clearer what challenges have happened or what has unfolded that gives rise to these challenges. Kwenzeke ntoni kanyaka?
It's been a very difficult time for Umbuto, and I think we've made progress now. At least what we can say is that the forensic report and the organizational investigation, we've finished it, independent reports by degrees. We are consulting with the organization in Abakan on how we go on, because some of the information is very sensitive, and it does expose people in terms of who are the beneficiaries of the misuse of money and corruption in the organization, and also what are the grounds that led to for those things to actually happen. So to that, we've received the independent report, and we are looking in the next few weeks to release that, so that the center, of course, Ombudu, that accountability, and that we must hand over the report to Abasal, who are members. Because remember, the SJC is a membership-based, community-based organization. So that is, we're in that process currently into doing that. And of course, I mean, our relationship with our funders has always been now dependent on these reports. And that's now we've finished the independent investigations, we'll be able to release that. And we'll try, of course, we're working very hard, because the SJC is quite a very important social movement in Cape Town, but that Babu with open book institutions like the coalition. How do you respond to this? So we are hoping in the next few weeks that things are gonna be much more clearer. We don't think that we've reached now a better space, or we'll reach a better space in the next coming few weeks, but in the spirit of accountability, in the spirit of anti corruption, and the next few weeks will be taking on the activity to account to other sides.
Wish you all of the strength, my brother, and the fortitude as you strive as an organization, Nabahlali, to rebuild, I guess, this movement, because Siskali, Sisthobe, Sandlin Zabantu, and we wish you all of the best as you do so, and long may you hold the front in the struggles that are confronting our communities in that part of the world.
No, thank you very much, Ayabo. Also good work with the IGLPLR show, so we wish you luck as well. But in the last year, the committee doesn't change. The committee needs to be safe, the committee needs sanitation, and that's the role that's been taken by SJP currently to fight back.
Nyane Sizwe, Diabulela Mafrika, thank you very much for your time. That is Zamam Tunzi. He is with the Social Justice Coalition speaking to us tonight. And of course, speaking about that particular matter in relation to the setting up of a new mobile station out in Khayelitsha. We hope that the relations between the police service and Nabahlali will improve, because there's no meaningful law enforcement in Nakukwenzeka. Without fixing udlelwano phakathi kwamapolisa nabahlali, ibalekile into yobakulungiswe kubekho imvisiswano, kubekho udlelwano phakathi kwamapolisa and abahlali in that part of the world. But yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Kungenzeka ukuba ngummi nomhlali wasekhayelitsha wakulamandla womakhaza. Kukuphawule na usixelele ba, you know, what's happening? Why is there this kind of discord and concern with how policing is unfolding or not unfolding in that part of the world? We take this brief break now. We come back to your voice notes.
I am my brother. Yo, after that, we need proper ululations. And I just think we need ululations in general, in Jay, after your career stint at Metro FM. You left a legacy, and we acknowledge the legacy that you are going to continue to build. Our evenings are never going to be the same. 7 o'clock is never going to be the same. And I hope and I trust, otherwise the industry would be sleeping on you, that you are moving onto a bigger platform, because your voice, your insight, your delivery, your execution is much needed. You are human before you are a radio presenter. You are human before you are a radio jock. You are human before you are a news anchor. And that is what we have come to appreciate about you. So thank you so much and salute.
Danko. Salute. Really appreciate it. It's been a good run. I don't know if I'd call it a career stint, because it's only just 4 years or just 48 months. But I've enjoyed every minute of it. And I've enjoyed every minute of your own contributions, because I inkqubo yam lena, as I've always said, akho kwamalume apha. Inkqubo yethu, inkqubo yabantu. because we don't operate a state broadcaster here. We operate a public broadcaster. It is the heritage, incubeko nenjebo yabantu baseMzantsi Afrika le. And that we have an opportunity yofumana noba nje lelo thutyana ezo yure zimbini ngokuhlwa kweli iqonga. Is something that I don't take for granted, and have been so fortunate to have had that opportunity, and I hope I've taken it with both hands. I hope in so doing, I've given many of us food for thought. I have certainly grown. I've learned certainly more than I have shared here on this platform, and long may the learning continue, because as I said, sixhobisana ngezixhobo zophila, and that's what it's about. Yeah, 23 minutes it is after 8 p.m. Some of your tweets coming through on this Makaza issue. Well, yeah, I don't know if it's a mobile clinic, but Adnande Pakati on Twitter says that Makaza mobile clinic, and I'm going to know if it's a mobile police station, is not accessible even after 8 or after 6 p.m. because the gate at the center is locked. It's more than useless. There was an armed robbery last year in that same center, and police just closed the door and locked themselves inside when the shooting started. Sure. Yeah, it's our Tech Conversations tonight, and I'm joined to take a look at something that unfolded last week. We did, of course, last week, was it last week Thursday? We took a young dip into some of the congressional hearings there into TikTok, just to give you a sense of what was happening last week. But it is quite a monumental issue, not just from a tech perspective, but even from a geopolitical perspective, this looming ban on TikTok in the United States. And I think many of you who are listening know how big TikTok is, especially certainly among the younger cohort in our society. And tonight, we unpack and make sense of what all of this is going to mean. Joined on the line by Editor-in-Chief of Fast Company South Africa, Wesley Dipuku. Wesley, good evening to you. Burundi Atembu Yapil.
Good evening, everyone. It's such an honor for me to be talking to you at this point in time. Maybe before we talk about TikTok, I just want to say thanks very much for everything you've done. I mean, it's an honor for me that I've actually participated in this show for some time. One is truly appreciate your engagement on economic issues. I mean, you've made it accessible to people. I mean, I want to appreciate the use of this course there and there. I mean, the chance, everything. So thank you, Abonga, and I'm sure we'll keep connecting on the other side.
Indeed, my brother, without a shadow of a doubt. And now, mandlulis umbulelo, man, Wesley, because, when we put a show together, it is to recognize that we are not the only ones who can help in weaving a tapestry that can at least be something that can clothe and warm ababantu bapulapule kwelinye icala. And I certainly, without fear of contradiction, will say that, elakho igalelo and of many of the other colleagues that we've worked alongside is immeasurable in what this show has become. And I think, the recordings of the show and the podcast stand as a record of that. And I really appreciate, igalelo lakho. And long may that continue, because I think even the publication that you publish, Lungu Tukuti, who are interested in the world of tech, and long may that continue, my brother. So, my brother, maskesa hambe manje sijonge le nto ka TikTok. Shou Chu is the CEO, Singaporean-born CEO of TikTok. He was under the conch last week. I was saying when we started the show now that I listened to some of it when I got home on Thursday night, and then of course it ended, I think at around 11 p.m. our time. And then the day after, I tried to check some of the recordings. And what became clear to me was that while the likes of Facebook, Amazon, and Google have gotten grillings as well, that the grilling of TikTok in this case took on a xenophobic and also a geopolitical character. I mean, at times, Shou Chu could not even finish a sentence. He was not even given time to answer in some instances. Statements were put to him that when he wanted to respond, to iqashaliphelile, move on to the next one. Why the hostility?
Abraham, I want to support what you just said there. It's so true. I mean, just to maybe add to that, one of the few things that I've picked up having watched that process is that, you know, previous ones, the Congress men and women were not as prepared. In fact, very few of them understood the issue. You know, one point I just want to make on that is that one of the few things I've noticed is that, you know, one of the congressmen, if not more, was a software engineer. That is his background. So that is the extent to which they were prepared. So in other words, the type of questions that they were putting to him, they were very well, they didn't want to take chances. So, yeah, so you ask, why is this such an important matter for the U.S.? So there are a couple of reasons. Obviously, the background maybe for Aba Kulapuli is to say that the U.S. has been saying or claiming that they are concerned about the manner in which TikTok is utilizing data of its citizens, in the sense that they believe that the Chinese government has access to it. So that is the one concern.
Mm.
You know, but I just want to make a point that one leader of tech who is now late made a point that was recorded, and he said, TikTok, the U.S. has no access to the data, but the U.S. has access to data of other platforms, and this is mainly the law. Mm. There's a law that prevents them from accessing the Chinese, or sort of the TikTok, but they have a law that allows them to request some stuff from the U.S.-based companies or which are registered companies, which they don't. So their access to the lack of access to TikTok is what is driving this. But there are other reasons as well.
So I guess the other question mark that I would have is the assurances given by TikTok that the data generated from U.S. users of TikTok would be located in the United States. To what degree does that give some reassurance to U.S. lawmakers that, you know, if ever they had to, they would potentially have that data in and within their country? And if push came to shove, if they needed to see whether there are national security or surveillance matters associated with TikTok keeping that data, that they would be able to find it?
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting you ask this question because a lot of people assume that the U.S. has no form of relationship with TikTok. So we will, some of our listeners will recall that this issue did not start now under the Biden administration. It started during Trump's administration. In fact, the administration pushed for a company called Oracle to be the one that has some form of access to TikTok in the form of them being shareholders, but also to check or to assess what is TikTok doing. That's one part of it. But what is also interesting, which a lot of people don't know, is that there are lots and lots of investors, U.S. investors, who are invested in TikTok. So, for instance, Sequoia Capital, one of the leading venture capital firms.
Yeah, that's Rudolf Buiter's outfit, no?
Exactly. Mm. So, and probably up to 10 of these VC firms that are invested in TikTok. So, it's not as if this entity is purely, let's say, a Chinese entity. So, there's some form of U.S. Influence, if you want. You know, I've mentioned one of the reasons for the this push by the U.S. The other one, of course, is that TikTok has gone beyond social networks that are of U.S. Ownership, if you want. So, the blue one, the British one owned by a former South African. So all of those are kind of friendly to the U.S., if you want. But also, they are immense powerful at TikTok in terms of influence, in terms of how people have actually adopted it and are utilizing it. So that is the other concern. Is that, I mean, they are concerned about the extent to which that control is beyond them as far as driving behavior and those kind of things. So, but anyway, to come back to your question, the point you're making is that it's not true that this entity is purely a Chinese entity. In fact, even the CEO is Singaporean, you know. Yeah,
and of course, I mean, I guess, there's so much here that also is driven by the context. And I come back to the geopolitics of it. You know, the language, by the way, is that of war. and I say that without fear of contradiction, the language is that of war because of what we've kind of seen here and some of the policies that have come through under the guise of national security. It might be the Inflation Reduction Act, it might be the CHIPS Act, which of course is about their own war with Beijing around, you know, semiconductor chips and so on. So, you know, and to what degree was that on display in the grilling by the lawmakers of the TikTok CEO last week?
You know, there are a couple of questions that we asked. One of them was about the extent to which TikTok knows your location as a user, like, for instance, the GPS, understanding of knowledge of people's location. All these things point to the concerns that you've mentioned. I just want to make a point which relates to what you're raising, is that this is not just about TikTok. We recall there's another one, Huawei, for instance, is another company that is kind of a similar type of check, if you want. The question that has been raised now, who is next? And there's already talks of another tech company that is its background that is probably on the view. So there's more, and that tells you that this is less about what has been mentioned, and that is data, but more about who has control over technology companies that have an impact on society. Right, and the fact that in Russia and Ukraine, you know, they make these things easier. You know, all of these factors matter. It's really about who controls the key tech platforms that have influence in society.
And of course, the influence here, unlike, I guess, with a Huawei, where we're talking just about hardware and maybe fifth generation technology, here, you know, it's a much more, you know, deeper sense of influence on the psyche of so many users who are normal people rather than, I guess, you know, those who are telecoms producers or any others who for whom a Huawei would have supplied. In this case, it's almost everybody, you know, above or below a certain age out in the United States. And maybe that's what might be concerning lawmakers even more.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe a different point. To understand how critical or how critical this whole issue of data, you have to look at what ChatGPT has achieved, right? Now, ChatGPT is made possible by data. What these guys have done, they have basically harvested the data on the internet. And this is how ChatGPT is able to answer the questions they really do, because they scraped the internet and they managed to put it all together in such a way that when you prompt it, it's able to provide these answers. Mm. Now, if you go back to TikTok, if they have this much data, and it's assumed for interest rate that truly there's a Chinese element to this. So the fear would be then that if you look at the power that ChatGPT has, that China could, or at least China would have such power. And already you can see the AI is a tool, is a weapon now, but it is perceived as a weapon in that whoever leads in that space is considered an entity that has power. And this is why you have, for instance, a response by Chinese tech companies also developing that, or at least launching their own AI tools, which is what is also happening in the US. So the point I'm trying to make is that data is its core to all of these things. If you want to understand why this concern about data, it's about those things, that data matters in all of these companies. And again, for clarity, when we talk about data in this case, we're referring to information.
So I guess, where to from here? So what are some of the other things we're likely to expect? I mean, is this it? And if so, what does Congress then subsequently do about the discussions that have been had?
So, you know, it's not that easy to ban an entity like TikTok. So there will be cost challenges, for instance, if it is banned. There will be a backlash by users. TikTok, one thing about tech entities or products, is that the moment users adopt them, they're able to also fight for them, if you want, on the streets or wherever they want to fight. So there will be that kind of backlash if it were to be banned. Of course, a complete ban is probably something that may be difficult, but doesn't stop them from, let's say, halting some use cases, some usage of the tool, like they've done with their government employees. And
What's interesting, if I may just mention that, the company that owns TikTok, a company called ByteDance, has recently launched a product that is similar to TikTok, a product that is similar to Instagram. And the app is called Lemonade. And that app, as we speak, has about 60 million downloads. It already has 4.4 million active users already.
Right. From where?
So the assumption is that this app has been launched a while ago, but it has now been brought to the public. Now it is highly marketed now to the public, at least in the U.S. The point I'm trying to make is that TikTok is already preparing for a potential ban, and it's not bad where to happen. There's already an alternative. There's already a plan B for them.
But where do they get all these users? Like...
Yeah, no. It's interesting because what is also possible is that they may be transferring some users from the previous
app
or some of the apps that they have. And because if you look at the at Lemonade, although it's difficult for normal people to see it in South Africa, there's already people on TikTok that are commenting about Lemonade, right there. Praise to this thing, so you can see, you know, if you look deeper, I can see there is a relationship here. But the point really about this is that it's difficult to ban these entities. There will always be a way out for them to continue doing what they do.
Baba, manbulele manam shagaz. We leave it here for this here platform. But I can assure you, we'll certainly be in touch and have many more discussions about the latest out in the world of tech. I really appreciate my brother once again, you know, the great work and insights that you've so generously shared with us on this platform.
Thanks. I hope I'll be invited to the other platform, which is a great innovation, by the way.
Faragito, we're trying, you know. We're trying. We need to break boundaries here at the SABC. Abo Andile, every day here of late, they broadcast to early cameras, abane lights. So now just come mama zegem zegwe ndu akuta. Are you going in?
Well done. We need to talk about that as well. It's a great one for me to be here. Well done.
Thank you very much, my brother.
All the best, brother.
Salute.
Yes, sure, endeavors. Cheers.
Thanks. Wesley Dipuku is the editor in chief of Fast Company, apa eMzantsi Afrika, apa Africa Tshipembe. Yeah, Mansu is saying Sandile Dikeni. Why does Sandile Dikeni sound like Ringo Madlingos? Yeah, it must be that Western Cape, Eastern Cape accent. But yeah, many of you asking, of course, what's this guava juice? Well, that is a poem from Sandile Dikeni, the late Sandile Dikeni, who was a columnist, who was a poet, who was a broadcaster, who was just an extraordinary fellow. Social critique, you know... jazz aficionado, I mean, the balandoni. And as I've said before, the guava juice, there is not the red stuff. The guava juice that he's referring to when he says, shake, shake, my comrade, and he calls it the invention of the working class, is a petrol bomb. It's a petrol bomb. Molotov cocktail. That's the name of it. But where he comes from in Victoria West, a very dusty and small town in the Eastern Cape, So the story goes like this. You know, he had come back from the University of the Western Cape where he was studying. This is in the late 1980s, you know, tense situation in the townships. And a few youngsters in the township go to him and they say, hey, you know, Praseta, got some guava juices here. Want to show you what a guava juice is. And he's like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And then they say, no, come, Praseta, let's show you. And they take him like on the outskirts of the township. And they show him like this, I don't know what to call it. It's like a cachet of like petrol bombs. So every day after school, what these kids would do is to go and collect like, you know, things from the shops or whatever, and go and scramble some money together and go buy petrol, and then take the wicks out of the paraffin heaters and make petrol bombs. And they were like, yeah, here are our guava juices. And then he made a poem about it. And we play it here. So that's the story.
Good evening, Aya. This is Jefferson from Santa Barbara in the US. I started listening to your show around September 2019 when I moved to the US for grad school. And I have been listening to it ever since. You've been a wealth of great wisdom. I like your take on political economy. And I've listened to your podcast and have drawn from your work as I think about my own work that I'm doing. I wish you all the best in your endeavors. And I've learned a lot about Pan-Africanism and these Berlin borders that we talk about. Interestingly, as I listen to your show from the US, I'm originally from Zimbabwe, but you make the connections with the globe and with Africa in your show.
Well, we have to.
And this is a real quality amongst sort of like public intellectuals, because I regard you as one of the public intellectuals. I wish you all the best in your endeavors. Go well. Kasibe.
Ngiyabonga. Maitabasa. Tatenda. Thank you so much, my brother. I really appreciate it. You know, when you hear somebody who says, I'm a graduate student, you know, I was out in the U.S., and I get a chance whenever I can. I mean, certain parts of the U.S., by the time we go on air, it is probably, we go on air at 7, so it's 1 p.m. in the afternoon in parts of the U.S., you know? And the gentleman says, I listen to it because it helps me with some of the work that I do. So lenkqubo isixhobisa sonke into zobawo. Abanye bazigraduate students bazawubhala i-long paper ne-thesis zabo. Becaphula kule bhekile elephu zamagwebo orhwebo noqoqosho. Hayi, ndiswele imilomo eliwaka yokubulela. Because I don't think in my wildest imagination and that of the team we've ever thought that this show would have had the impact that it has. I mean, Murena Maseko on Twitter says, and the people indeed will govern. And he says, Tselatswe umuruesu. You make education cool, and that's because it is cool. We appreciate the knowledge sharing shows. Rinaliwe na di podcasting, ki ulakata kapu kapu ya mahlohonolo bupilong. You must help me here. Uringwanesu ulakata kapu kapu ya mahlohonolo bupilong. I don't know what that means, but ndiyayazi uba ikhona into entle andinqwenela yona ebomini. And maybe the colleagues will assist me there with the translation. Kyalebuwa ngwanesu. Thank you very much for that. And of course, talking about these Berlin borders, you know, we have a national question now here in Lesotho. There's an issue there about the territorial integrity arising from the UN resolution of 1962 on Basotho land. Eh? I was hoping we'd speak to Rapelang Khatebe, but Upungana Kafumanek, I don't know. But it is a fascinating thing for me. Because for once, it is starting to raise very particular questions about the demarcation of the borders that we have, especially in relation to the countries in our region that were protectorates of the United Kingdom or Britain. You know, Botswana, Swaziland, and Lesotho, who were protectorates. At the time, Botswana was known as Botswana land, Lesotho as Basotho land, and I think Eswatini was known as Swaziland at the time. So we're dealing with that national question, and I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on that. But yeah, let's continue to hear those voice notes, and in the next few minutes or so, Butlokwa and Mansu are going to be joining me. We are going to be doing the final handover to Let's Talk About It. Because there's some announcement of the nominees of the Metro FM Music Awards that's happening tomorrow. So bazawuza nalonke ngubo beyithulula ivela ngaphaya in the north, out in Sandton, Kwezandawu zokudlala ipolo, where people dress in their nines. You know, they wear, what do they call those? Kutlwana, what do they call those hats of the ladies of the manor who have high teas and so on? Indeed. Oh, we have on the line none other than the Duke of Whittlesea. Ndakamabhece. That Duke himself, futhi inkosi yam.
Inkosi yam ambalwa.
Yeah.
Okokuqala mazene thole ngembeko othe wanika isizwe sona. Esikweni ubolekwe umboko kwelijelo sasazo Metro FM.
Camago.
Inkulu into othe wayenza unjanjoku wabeka ezingeni eliphakamileyo umnombo wonke wakwaqawa.
Mm.
Wabeka phambili futhi isizwe esimnyama ngokuthi wenze into oyithunyiweyo ugqwese ngapha koko.
Mm.
Kambe ndinelunda ngawe. Wesi sasaza jelo linye kodwa ke amathuba okuba ndiphulaphule xa usenzo dume ngazo njengalo mzuzu ngoku ndiyazinikela lothuba lokuba
nami kaloku ndimo phulaphule yakho inkqubo wena awunali thuba lophulaphule yam
okwalo mzuzu ndinalo kuba ngoku andisasazi
inkosi yabo
ngoko ke njengoba ingathi ndindlo ubukhali sube ndilolo umzekelo bobulumko bakho
ah ndiyabulela mntu mabhece ndiyabulela
okokugqibela nkosi yam ahamba ke ngoku uye kwelozwe ndakubonisa lona uba ngaba bendiza kunyuka ngendiba ndingena kula ncwadini emilele bomba
hayi
kodwa kwanele ukuba ngaba ndithi sisajonge elikhulu kuwe
ndiyabulela
uhamba phezu kwemithandazo nemigudu yabaninzi phambi kwakho ngokuqinisekileyo awusayi kusihlaza kambe usenze sizingombe ezifuba zikhukhumale kambe
yho
kuba inene sakubona ucawa sibona nequzethu kuwe
hayi
abantu yakuthi
ungawagxobi into yakuthi mahle 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 ndiyabulela kakhulu mntaka mabhece. Thank you very much, my brother. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much. That day is Songezo Mabhece. He hosts the Talking Point out on SAFM. And yeah, I don't know. Jos, we need a podcast of that, just that piece. Because some of those words, ebese nyuka pa umntaka Mabhece. Ebeseza neBhayibheli. But yeah, check out his show. I mean, beautiful, beautiful offering on our sister station, SAFM, The Talking Point. And he's often on from 9 p.m., I think, between 9 and 10 né? In the week. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fascinating show. 8 to 10. Yes, yes, yes. 8 to 10. Because he walks past here while we are on air. But yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's talk about it. The team is here. Ngicela basondele kwi microphone. Butlokwa, ngicela basondele okanye basondeze I microphones. We have Butlokwa here and we have Mantswe. Guys, this is the last handover.
Sakinach.
It's the last handover. Mm-hmm. It is not bye. Because kula podcast ndiyakwenza welcome pa.
Mm.
So welcome ndiyanicela. Ikhona into ekufuna siyoyincokola ku welcome.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean you guys have been a fascinating team to work with. I am so invested in your show, you have no idea.
We know.
We know. Like, investments are showing you, know, like.
He even likes the posts.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Dude,
yeah.
I mean, come on. Like, they know me on Instagram. I like. And I'm like. Oh, yo, 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 yo. Because I really think you guys have done such a great job.
Thank you.
In the last 8 months. I've really enjoyed, like, listening to the show. I've really enjoyed talking to you guys about the show that you put together. Mm. And it's so sad, man, that, you know, this comes to an end.
Yeah.
But, you know, till next time, because this is not the last time.
Absolutely.
But you guys are stars. You make beautiful radio. You make expensive radio.
Come on.
And, I mean, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. And, you know, Butlokwa's behind all of the magic there behind the scenes. She's the one who gets the matrasical content correct and right, you know. And love the show. And so yeah, what are we talking about tonight, Butlokwa? I'm gonna ask you.
Thank you. Oh, amazing.
What did you dish up for tonight?
So hi guys I'm a producer for a reason.
You so, have a voice for radio, by the way.
But hey. Thanks guys. So our first discussion at quarter past nine, we're talking about a showcase, an exhibition that highlights the lives of women who do hair,
yes,
in Joburg.
Okay.
So the
stulo, the stulo dynamic.
Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's an initiative by female photographers, where they document these women's stories and their lives.
So it's like a photo essay type thing.
Yes.
Love to see it. So where's the exhibition? Where's it happening?
I think it's here.
Oh, I need to listen to the show.
It's somewhere around Auckland Park. I think it's right up there.
Okay, Zikona Zit.
Yeah, we'll touch on where it is when I speak to the lady.
Okay,
later.
Awesome, so awesome.
And then on the chair we've got.
This Ayanda is so nice. She's doing the handover.
But Ayanda.
Ayanda Ali.
Yeah. Oh, Machola.
Yes,
oh,
we have
man,
her.
Man, that's dope.
She's starting a new show on SABC 2.
She's singing as well.
Yes, she is as well. So she's incredible. She's one person that's been able to rebrand herself and just
capacity for do the invention,
next thing. She was the former spokesperson for the Minister of Transport. So she's really incredible. Mm. And she's got a story to tell. So yeah, that's it.
thanks Matrikwa. Oh, that was awesome.
That was great. You should have done that for the past 8 months.
Yeah, actually, no.
Honestly,
you know,
you should have done.
I was out figure late. I went to land.
I can never arrive late.
I was out figure late. Pout.
Yeah, bo.
Injalo.
Can you believe it? It's been great.
Yeah, it's been great.
Nice. I heard someone said, that's like an overflow of blessings.
That's the last number of
that's
blessings.
That's like an overflow of blessings. That's like the most blessings you can get. No, all the blessings you can imagine.
I'm
sure
the
best
they
really
are
wishing
you this.
You are incredible. You are intelligent.
Yeah.
You've made an amazing radio.
You absolutely have.
Oh, you're also just a great person, guys. Behind the scenes, he's really an amazing person.
Yeah. That person actually reminded me of a saying that my grand loves. It's a sort of saying, Mijo hai rutanwi hu rutanwa di hlar, I think.
Mijo hai rutanwi.
Yes. Hu rutanwa di hlar, which means every man has a capacity to carve their way and their path and their future.
Wow.
And you must remember that you are here. It's not because, you know, like a lot of people believe in luck and stars and everything else. But you are the architect of your life, and you've gotten yourself here with the help of everyone that contributed in your life in some way. But also with the contribution of your family, your friends, with the guidance of your stars and your angels and your ancestors. But you are the main architect of getting yourself here, and you need to take time to just be like, I did that for myself. We know you're not that guy. You don't do that.
Nah,
but when you
guys,
look but when you look at everything that you do, really, just remember hore mejo hai rutan rutan wa dihlar.
Jaws, ndiyacela mana clip. Ndiyacela na clip, bra, because you know, I'm gonna get my sutu right. Because you know, I mean, guys, thank you so much. Thank you for everything. And thank you for being just, you know, great colleagues and
the dashiki. Oh no.
We were supposed to get you a dashiki.
We were getting you a dashiki, Buhlokwa and I. It's custom made. No, it's custom made. We weren't getting it from a shop, so it's still being made. It wasn't done on time.
It's a tungisani.
Ah, it's a real tungisani.
Who's making it?
It's a lady called Inga. She makes a lot of my stuff.
Can I go and interview Inga for the podcast?
Please interview her. She makes amazing clothes.
Yeah. So
so she's making your dashiki.
I need to see the dashiki, and then after I see it, I'll figure Inga, because I need to. And Ingati, your name just says Transkei.
So your dashiki will be following you wherever you go.
Oh man, you know, guys. If there's anything for
you
me,
you love a dashiki.
Oh, mani patterns, let me turn this one, let me see. Oh, just that you don't, and it may make me chat with you, but it's okay. I call away. Folks, I'm a man to number, but because it's out in the court. But for me, it's to thank all of you. We couldn't get through all of the voice notes. I hope, Kutlwano, we can try and have a way where those voice notes are sent to me so I can just listen to them and really just express some gratitude. But yeah, this is where we ended, folks. This is the end of the road for Metro FM Talk with Ayabonga Cawe. It's been 4 years of service, in my view, and I'm so appreciative of all of the work that has gone into this. Big thank you, Kutlwano, for standing in for Ujola tonight. And Jaws, big thank you, my brother, for all of the great work over the last 4 years. And to you, the listener, umbulelonga zenzisi, umancapule pa kumfundisi kasolilo. When I think of all of you, because in many ways, all of you are the owners and the inheritors of this great heritage of this country. And all of you have claim to this economy and to the future that we all want. Ngenene ndozoba ukuyalunga elizweni uthi usolilo uthi ndiva ngezulu kunqina nina ningothemba linzulu ngokwesiziba nina ningosole enkala ndilincamile ingakumbi ke nina ningomile emalikeni ningena kususwa nine bango kweli lizwe. Take strength, ma Africa, ukutyiwa kombona kuchubelana nangoku sizawuhlala siyibanga le economy. Danko!